This is the Electronic Intifada Newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman, Associate Editor at the Electronic Intifada. It's day 720 of Israel's genocide in Gaza. Here's a brief summary of some of the latest developments this week in Palestine. Israel has killed at least 357 Palestinians and injured at least 1,500 between September 17th and September 24th, according to official records from the Ministry of Health in Gaza. Most of the attacks are still concentrated in Gaza City, where Israel has been bombing high-rise residential towers, hospitals, refugee camps, and tent shelters for weeks as its ground forces advance. Reporter Mohammed Kita recorded this clip of an Israeli tank on a road in Gaza City on Tuesday. After a few moments of filming, the tank's gun rotates toward the reporter. Israel continues to use remote-controlled vehicles to destroy entire residential buildings across the city. Photojournalist Ahmed Al-Sawafiri recorded such an attack on September 20th. The UN Human Rights Office says that between September 19th and 20th, there were at least 18 recorded attacks on residential buildings in Gaza City, with dozens killed and more remaining buried under the rubble. One of the deadliest attacks, the Human Rights Office says, was a strike on September 20th on three inhabited residential buildings on a single block in the Sabra neighborhood in southern Gaza City. The Israeli attack killed at least 20 members of the Dagmash family, including 12 children, with dozens reported missing under the rubble. This came just a day after another residential building housing other members of the Dagmash family in the same area had been struck, killing 8 family members, including at least 4 girls. Faris Afanna, the director of emergency and medical services in Gaza, told reporter Mohammed Abu Salama that ambulance and rescue crews worked nonstop to recover bodies from under the rubble after the September 20th attacks. Afanna said that emergency workers, quote, continue to provide the service despite the danger. The next day, relatives searched local morgues for the remains of their loved ones, while dozens more remained trapped under the concrete. Journalist Saeed Hezbollah filmed an injured young man breaking down after losing his uncle, his cousins, and all of his relatives in the attack. Sitting on the bed of a truck loaded with bodies of his relatives wrapped in blankets, he says, quote, look what they did to us, so that the world will see what they're doing to us. Look, martyrs, martyrs. Israel continued to attack the Beach refugee camp in western Gaza City this week. Reporter Hussein Kersoa filmed a distraught father searching for his children buried under the rubble on September 23rd after an airstrike on homes in the camp. He says, quote, I can't hear you, children, calling over and over again for Salma and Saeed. Shouting through tears and pounding on rubble with a hammer, he calls out to Saeed saying, didn't I tell you to take care of your sister? Didn't I tell you to take care of your sister, my son, before collapsing in agony?
Salma! Salma! Salma, Yaba! Saeed! 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 Sayed! Yaba! 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 Sayed! Sayed! Yaba! Sayed!
On Wednesday, September 24th, Israel bombed a residential building where mutual aid workers with the Samir Project organize food for distribution in northern Gaza. A fire quickly spread inside the building. You can hear children screaming as they're being pulled out by people nearby. Rescue workers say that they searched for people buried in the rubble and retrieved a number of bodies. The Samir Project stated, quote, as food packages were being organized for a distribution, the occupation bombed a residential building, leveling the area around where our team was working. Nearly 500,000 people remain in the north of Gaza. Whether because they refuse to leave their land or because they are unable to find costly transport south, thousands and thousands of families still need food, still need water, still need our help as they are being bombed without mercy. And on Tuesday, civil defense spokesperson Mahmoud Bassal captured this wrenching moment when a small boy carried the body of his four-year-old cousin, Zain, wrapped in a shroud to a cemetery. Bassal says that Zain was killed in an airstrike that claimed the lives of 33 people. The boy, accompanied by his father, kisses the shroud and says, "May God have mercy on you, my beloved Zain. You and I used to play together, my darling Zain. We used to play together every day. Send my greetings to your sister and to your father and siblings." The UN Human Rights Office said that these relentless attacks, quote, in addition to the steady advance of the Israeli ground forces toward western Gaza City, demolishing residential buildings under its control on the way, appear to have resulted in renewed waves of mass forced displacement to the south of Gaza, where there is no space, infrastructure, or basic necessities to support the influx of internally displaced persons, and where the Israeli military continues to strike shelters, the UN said. Israel's sharp increase in the number of civilians being slaughtered in Gaza City, the UN Human Rights Office added, seem intended to inflict terror on the Palestinian population of Gaza City, forcing tens of thousands to flee. Between September 17th and September 20th, nearly 82,000 Palestinians were displaced from northern to southern Gaza. Photojournalist Moaz Hosni filmed families crammed onto trucks, as he says, quote, united not by a road or a destination, but by the inability to afford the journey, like a temporary arc of collective survival. On September 20th, our contributor Asim Annabi, the spokesperson for the Gaza municipality, wrote on social media that, quote, my mind cannot digest the idea of losing Gaza. My brain is incapable of processing the meaning of such a loss. I can't even understand the word itself. I can't engage with it, and I can't place it within any logical context. I might be able to understand and process the loss of anything else, to frame it in a way that time could help me cope with. But losing Gaza? No way. There's no logic in it. None at all. Israel continues to bomb hospitals and the areas surrounding them. On September 22nd, the Israeli army struck the Palestinian Medical Relief Society's building in Gaza City, sending an enormous plume of smoke into the sky. Medical Aid for Palestinians, MAP, a British charity that works with the Palestinian Medical Relief Society, stated, quote, "On September 22nd, an Israeli military airstrike destroyed Al-Samar Clinic, which had been providing healthcare services since 2006. The clinic has been reduced to rubble and its services shut down. The clinic was a cornerstone of community health and provided vital primary health care, mental health support, cancer care, blood donation, physiotherapy, and women's services," MAP stated. 45 staff members, including cardiologists and nutritionists, have lost their place of work and their patients have been left without care. Staff, quote, "were given just 10 minutes to evacuate before the clinic was struck. The attack has left the clinic completely destroyed and unusable, including its laboratories and its assistive devices center." In the past 3 weeks alone, the Medical Relief Society reports that three of their clinics across Gaza have been targeted in Israeli military attacks. Two have been completely destroyed, and one clinic has been partially damaged. The Ministry of Health in Gaza reported also on September 22nd that after bombing Al-Rantisi Pediatric Hospital last week, it is now completely out of service due to the Israeli army continuing to target the hospital's surroundings. Along with the only children's hospital, the last remaining clinic providing ophthalmological services in Gaza, is also closed, the ministry said, as there are no safe roads to either facilities that will allow patients to reach them. Australian doctor Nada Abu Al-Rob, who is working at various Gaza hospitals, described the state of the accelerating medical catastrophe for patients and doctors, especially as mass casualty events are continuous. She says that in addition to the slaughter by airstrikes and tanks, every few hours children arrive at the hospitals malnourished and suffering from infections, leading to cardiac arrests.
We have Mohammed Hamdan here. We lost his sister yesterday, Farah Hamdan. And since it was day one for me, and since arrival, we met a lot of other kids who had the same problem. So they all arrived malnourished. Mohammed is better today. He could at least walk. Yesterday, we were so busy looking after him. There was no time to take pictures and photos and videos in the middle of disaster. His legs couldn't hold him because how malnourished he is. Adi Umru Hamdan, Mohammed. Ashra. He's 10 years old, but he definitely looks younger than 10 years old. His sister was 15. She looked 10 or 7 even. On top of the malnourishment, most of the people here are now intoxicated by the dirty water. So the water here is not good for human use. Even as doctors now, we all have gastritis. And with the poor kids, they can't tolerate as much as we do. On top of their malnutrition, once they have diarrhea, they all run into severe hypokalemia. So we're now watching kids that having a cardiac arrest. Every few hours, we have a kid with a cardiac arrest.
Dr. Nada Abu Al-Rub. And doctors are still being targeted. On September 20th, Israel bombed the home of Dr. Mohammed Abu Salmiya, the director of Al-Shifa Hospital, who was abducted by Israeli forces in November 2023 and detained and tortured for 7 months. He says he left his home in the Beach refugee camp to go to work at Al-Shifa, and the bodies of 6 of his relatives arrived while he was on duty. Reporter Nahed Hajjaj filmed Dr. Abu Salmiya mourning over the bodies of his brother, 2 nephews, his nephew's wife, and 2 of their children. Turning quickly to the occupied West Bank, Israeli settlers backed by Israeli soldiers shot and killed 20-year-old Saeed Murad Nassan on Tuesday in the village of Al-Mugayr near Ramallah. On Wednesday, Israeli settlers then attacked the funeral of the young man, firing live ammunition at the mourners, Wafa News Agency reported. Meanwhile, Israel closed the Allenby Bridge crossing between the West Bank and Jordan indefinitely, just 3 days after reopening it following a shooting by a Jordanian national that killed two Israeli soldiers. The crossing in the Jordan Valley, known as Karama on the Palestinian side, is the only crossing point between Jordan and the West Bank. Most of the West Bank's 3.3 million residents depend on the bridge for travel abroad. This week, our contributor Bouthaina Hamdan, who is based in Ramallah, wrote in her feature article that as the genocide continues in Gaza, quote, "We are living under a slow genocide in the West Bank, with Israel's annexation of more land, daily killings at the hands of settlers and soldiers, and constant financial strain." We've published many features on the Electronic Intifada in the last week, but we wanted to highlight Brown-Eyed Girl, Men Playing Chess Massacred on My Street by Ahmed Abu Shawish, writing from Gaza. Ahmed writes about an initiative for children that he and his family started in 2024, where they used their solar panels to power a screen in the backyard of their house and display cartoons for the displaced neighboring children. Eventually, with some funding, Ahmed says that his family expanded their activities to include psychological support for the children through art and play therapy. One of those children, Ahmed says, was a 5-year-old girl named Siham Al-Ashi. Quote, "Soso was the pet name I had given her as she would always run toward me, her arms wide open, ready to fold me into a hug. On November 10th, 2024, at around 1:35 p.m., I stepped outside my home. Children were completely absorbed in their games, and Soso was there, hopping between chalked squares. A few meters away, Abu Hadi, Abu Nahed, and Abu Ahmed huddled around the chessboard. 'Come and see how I'm finally going to beat Abu Ahmed,' Abu Hadi called me with a voice full of playful confidence. I smiled and was genuinely curious, as he had never won a single game before. But something made me hesitate. Some kind of a providence. For the first time, I didn't join them and went back inside. I sat down, scrolling through my phone for a few minutes. My curiosity tugged at me more to see if Abu Hadi would really manage to defeat Abu Ahmed. I got up at 1:45 p.m. and opened the front door. I headed toward the garden door to open it and go out to the by street. But I felt as if everything collapsed. An explosion tore through the street and hurled me back. A storm of fragments and dust engulfed me, and my eardrums felt as if they had been perforated by the piercing sound. Chunks of flesh clung to my face and shirt. Blood spattered across our front door. I froze. My arms were trembling, my legs numb. I couldn't move for a moment. The world went silent, except for the ringing in my ears and the heaviness crushing my chest. With faltering steps, I tried to open the garden door, but it didn't budge as it had been twisted and shattered by the blast. I sprinted back inside the house, turned to the door facing the main street, then stepped outside and headed toward the by street where we used to gather every day. The scene was ineffable, horrifying beyond anything words could describe. 4 or 5 bodies lay motionless on the ground right in front of our house. I couldn't move forward, my knees locked, my voice cracked. Oh God, was all I could cry out. Dust was all around. I took a few more steps, and that's when I saw a little girl lying on the ground with part of her brain exposed from her head. She was Soso. I bent down and checked her chest, feeling for her heartbeat with shaky hands. She was still breathing, her pulse faint. Some people screamed around me. Leave her, cover the body. I couldn't. All I was thinking about was saving Soso. I picked her up in my arms and hurried a few steps toward the main street, desperate to find any transportation to take her to the hospital. Just then, 2 people with a motorcycle stopped, took Soso, and rushed her to Al-Auda Hospital in Nuseirat. I returned to the site of the incident. The dust had settled, and I saw the full picture of the street. It transformed into something I still cannot name. Beheaded and torn bodies were scattered around. I couldn't recognize a single face, not even one. Then I saw a body wearing a navy blue t-shirt I knew very well. It was mine. Only then did I realize it was my close friend Hisham's body. He had been killed alongside Abu Hadi and Abu Ahmed. Soso went into clinical death and passed away 2 days later on November 12th. The smell of death in Gaza became familiar, almost routine. The street that was once full of life now turned into a ghost street. That airstrike didn't kill me, but it destroyed something inside. It wiped out all the vibes that filled the place. From that moment on, I started avoiding walking through that road, not out of fear, but because I don't want to relive that terrible scene again. It is a mental wound that I will carry for the rest of my life. A few moments separated me from death, but maybe God chose me to live and tell the story of my friends and neighbors. Those are excerpts from Brown-Eyed Girl, Men Playing Chess Massacred on My Street by Ahmad Abu Shawish, a journalist and activist in Gaza, on electronicintifada.net. And now, as we always do, we wanted to highlight people expressing joy, determination, and resilience across Gaza and around the world. Today, we'll focus on a general strike by workers and union members across Italy on Monday, who shut down the country to demand an end to Israel's genocide. The Associated Press stated that Italy's grassroots unions, which represent hundreds of thousands of people ranging from school teachers to metal workers, called for a 24-hour general strike in both public and private sectors, including public transportation, trains, schools, and ports. Roads and highways were also shut down. 10,000 people blocked the main highway between Florence and Bologna alone. The transit of goods was slowed or partially blocked by workers' sit-ins and rallies in Italy's main ports of Genova and Livorno. More than 20,000 people gathered in front of Rome's central station to protest the genocide. Unions and student organizations denounced, quote, the inertia of the Italian and EU governments, the AP reported. Walter Montagnoli, the national secretary of the CUB union, said at the protest in Milan, quote, if we don't block what Israel is doing, if we don't block trade, the distribution of weapons and everything else with Israel, we will not ever achieve anything. The Italian news site Genova 24 compiled clips of some of the protests. Students declared, we are all anti-Zionists, and marched in the streets of Genova.
Forte, forte!
Siamo tutti anti-Zionisti!
Forte!
And that's it for the news roundup. As always, go to electronicintifada.net for much more, especially to read our new features by our brave writers in Gaza. You've been listening to the Electronic Intifada's newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. Want to hear more? Check out our live stream with interviews, reports, and analysis, along with print articles, podcasts, and more at electronicintifada.net. Produced by Nora Barrows-Friedman, Tamara Nassar, and Pierre Loisel.